Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief, as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, Griefsters, I hope you're doing okay. Happy Halloween, of course. Does anyone else get slightly freaked out by Halloween? I always used to slightly worry that my dad would say hello on this day. But don't worry, guys, 20 years on and nothing so far. So I'm sure you all have a not scary night. I mean, you want to hear from them, but also it's terrifying. One of my best pals lives in Mexico and she is very fond of the Day of the Dead celebrations, which will be happening this weekend. And it's a very unique way of remembering your loved ones who are no longer here. So if you haven't heard of it, do, you know, just Google it, guys, have a look at what they do, because it can be a nice way to remember them if you're struggling this week. Just a reminder, we have two live shows coming up. One this Saturday, if you're listening on the day that it comes out, November the 3rd at the BFI in London at 5 p.m. We'll be joined by Emma Freud and Catherine Ryan for some very cheery chats about death. And if you can't make that one, we've got another one coming up on November the 16th at the Dulwich Picture Gallery with Jeff Lloyd, Stevie Martin and Sophie Duker. This week, I'm talking to writer and performer Kaylee Llewellyn. Kaylee is an amazing comedy writer who has a pilot out right now on the BBC iPlayer called In My Skin, which is a really funny and heartbreaking comedy drama about a young Welsh girl coping with her mum's mental illness, and I genuinely can't recommend it enough. This is also a special episode for the Griefcast, as it's the first returning guest we've had. If you haven't listened to Kaylee's first episode, I'd really recommend you do. It's episode 9, all the way back there. You don't have to, but it really is an incredibly honest and poignant chat from Kaylee. And just to give you the backstory, she lost 6 members of her family in 1 year. Yeah, pretty big. So I wanted to catch up with Kaylee again and basically just see how she is doing with her grief journey. So here she is. Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with writer and improviser Kaylee Llewellyn.
Hi, Carrie.
You gave me a nod. They're like, ready to speak.
And go.
Kaylee, regular listeners of Griefcast will know you because this is your return. Yeah. Return of Kaylee Llewellyn.
Grief, the sequel. She's back.
This time, it's serious. And we've never done this before. We've never done a second follow-up. But if anyone hasn't listened to your episode, go back now and listen to your first episode, because it will explain why you definitely deservedly had to come back.
Yeah, so the first episode...
Your life.
The first episode of Kaylee's, Kaylee Llewellyn's life. No, in my life, which we spoke about in the first episode, I had a 355-day period of losing 6 family members.
Still, when you say that, I still feel like someone just hit me in the stomach a little bit.
Yeah.
And when I tell people, often, you know, when we talk about extremes, I always say, you should listen to Kaylee's episode. Like, that's... If you
there's
think you're
on.
Having a bit of a tough time, like, isn't Kaylee's perspective on things?
Oh, life comes at you fast sometimes, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It does feel strange to me still because it's that old cliche about death that it's not that long ago.
Yeah.
Really.
When was it? Let's put it in context.
So it was April 2015 through to April 2016.
And I think I spoke to you in 2016, didn't I? I think I spoke. Or did I?
We spoke. March 2017.
Oh, sorry.
So
yeah,
we were coming up for some anniversaries.
Oh, yeah. So just like the first year after that. So do you want to go through, if you don't mind, what like who you lost in that 355 days?
Yeah. So we began with my father in April 2015. And then 2 months later in June 2015 was my granddad. And then January 2016, the 23rd of January, it was my grandmother. And then 2 days later, my 12-year-old nephew had an asthma attack and died. And then, God, the dates start to blur. It's about 6 weeks after my nephew that his mother died. And then about another sort of 8 weeks after my nephew, his father, my brother, died. So that was a...
I mean, I'm sort of half laughed because it's just like, it's an insane... And as I think we said at the time, like, if you were writing it, you'd say, yeah, that's too much.
Yeah. Ease off, come on.
Yeah.
Well, there was an interesting thing about my nephew and his parents because that was a whole family wiped out in a matter of about 9 weeks.
God.
That you sort of go, a family existed and now they do not. And they all died separately of one another. Because you hear of that happening, like, there's a car crash or there's a war on and there's a bomb or, you know, whatever. The varying ways people can be killed off. But yeah, for them all to just die independently of one another so quickly, it was really odd.
Yeah.
As grief is not just odd, many other things too, but weird.
Yeah, that is, I think that's the right word. And we talk about that in the introduction, like the weirdness of grief. But I do think that situation is weird because it is, I think sometimes we talk to people and I'm like, you know what? People die. That's what happens. You know, parents die. But with you, I do feel like that was a very unusual situation to deal with. So that was, so 2017, so in 2018, so it's been another year. So let's start with like, I guess maybe it's a stupid question, but like, how are you at the moment moving a year away from, another year away from that grief? How has that year been for you in terms of your grieving?
I think, so I was 28 when it all began, which, you know, when you're any age at the time, you think, I'm so old and wise.
Yeah.
But now I've got another... few more years on that. I think it changes and evolves day to day. I'm good. I feel in many ways I'm the happiest I've ever been. In many ways I'm the happiest I've ever been, but I'm rawer than I've ever been as well.
Oh really? Do you feel like the emotions, do you feel like you were in shock and now the emotions are starting to bubble up maybe?
Yeah, and things come around that catch off guard, and I don't know, I still can have my breath physically knocked out of me.
Yeah.
You know, something comes around or, I don't know, I have a particular memory of going to see Beyonce at Wembley Stadium and having the most awful 2.5 hours of my life because it was so cool and fun and everyone was dancing. And it was the, you know, when the arenas open and this like the sun was setting and the sky looked incredible. And I kept having this really overwhelming feeling of, I'm so lucky that this is my life. That I have enough money that I can come and see Beyonce. Because not everyone does have enough money to buy a Beyonce ticket because they ain't cheap. and I can look at this beautiful sky and I live in London. All my cool friends are around me and we're just having the best time. And it kept sucking the wind out of my stomach that I was thinking, my nephew will never know this. He was 12 and he will never, ever, ever, ever know this. And so things like that still do come around. But I have a good friend, Laura, who lost her mum when she was a teenager. And when Travis first died, and I was finding that so hard. Because when an adult dies, you can go, they lived these things.
Yeah.
The adults went to concerts, or they travelled abroad, or they whatever. With my nephew, I just, any experience that I had, I felt guilty for, almost.
Yeah.
Any fun thing I did. And I remember Laura speaking to me and saying, instead of feeling guilty, can you start to think I'm doing it for you?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he loved climbing trees. And a few weeks after we buried him, I went away with a friend to North Wales, this incredible, like, big stately home with massive gardens and trees. And I was like, I'm finding it so hard being here. Imagine him scrambling at the trees and playing and whatever. And Laura was like, you better get up the tree then. If that's what he would have done and that's what he would have loved, get up the tree and be like, I'm climbing a bloody tree for you so that I can experience it, because you can't. So
that's a really nice way of thinking about it.
I think so.
But it's still hard.
It's still...
And I think, obviously, I know you, and having still, you know, maintained our friendship, despite having you been on the show, you still talk to me. I do feel like there is still, obviously, and it's completely understandable, there is still a big sadness around Travis's...
Yes.
Like, I feel like the way you talk about the others reminds me of other people who come on the show, or myself, of like, yeah, it's hard, I'm working through it, but there seems to still be such a pain. Understandably, because he was 12 years old, and that is, it's just, I understand.
It's
raw. Completely understand that. Well, I think I understand that feeling you're saying about that breath of like, because it's just, it's such a painful thing.
It is, yeah. And with a child in particular, I mean, with all of them, all of my family grieve for them, and people express their grief in different ways. But with a child, there are things that can still catch me off guard. Like if I open Facebook and someone from my family has posted a picture of him, and it's almost that like it gets injected into your day when you weren't expecting it.
Yeah.
And that's their right to share. Like a photo's come up on their Facebook and they want to share it and go, remembering 2 years ago when I was on the Dodgems with Travis and now he's not here or whatever. But for me, if I'm just walking into a meeting and I've like on autopilot opened my phone and I almost stagger back because I'm not expecting to see his face. And still the shock that, like, you know, we've all seen on the news when a child dies, or, you know, awful stories where a kid is abducted from school or whatever, and there's that stock photo of a child in a school uniform grinning, going around being like, has anyone seen this child? And you just think, God, how awful. And still now, that stock photograph that comes up of a little boy in his year 7 high school photographs is my boy.
Mm.
That still, and it can knock me off my feet, because in the first but second you look at it and go, who's this little kid that someone's lost, and you go, it's yours. That's still a bit of a shock. Or the other week I was out, last week in fact, I was at the cinema, and I came out of the film and I opened it and I had all these texts from my sister, and our cousin was at the time at a psychic night. And
blimey.
supposedly the psychic was channeling Travis's spirit. And I say supposedly not because I don't necessarily not believe in psychics or any of that, but this particular psychic I have questions around. But I was just walking out of the cinema and I'd just seen this great film and I'd had like ice cream and I was feeling like I was going to go home and have a nice sleep. And then suddenly there's all these messages like, Travis is apparently here. He's got these messages. She's saying this about his funeral and he knows this and he knows that. And, you know, you're just like, fucking hell, I wasn't expecting that right now.
I think, I mean, that still gets me.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a different situation. I would hate to compare them, but obviously because my dad was 44, which is still young, but he wasn't 12. But yeah, there's still things that get me, you know, that's, like you said, still catch you off guard. I think the common one is the people looking the same.
Mm.
Like, I'd still have that, like, especially on the... I've talked about this before, but like on the tube, because he was a man who wore suits, a balding middle-aged man, like you see a lot of that guy on the tube.
Yeah.
Like, and it still catches my breath when you're like, is that it? Oh my God, it's my dad. Oh no, obviously it's not, he's been dead 20 years, but just that sort of human recognition instinct, I think it must be, of like, I'm supposed to look at that person because that's my family.
That shape and face organisation is ingrained on me as, we do that, don't we, as humans, like, you know, they often say that like women will end up with a man that looks vaguely like their dad because you've been exposed to that.
Yes, terrifying.
Yeah. I'm glad I'm a lesbian.
But then does it work the other way? Does it look like your mum?
My Emily doesn't look like my mum, no.
Okay, that's good. That's right.
No.
They're safe.
I have thought before, though, I sometimes look in the mirror now, and there are angles that I look in the mirror where I look so much like my mother, I think, I'll never have sex again. I'll never have a sexual thought again. Because, apparently I'm my mother.
It's so freaky how it happens, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so freaky. I think my brother, a lot of people say he looks like my dad, but I don't really see it because my dad was quite short, a short Welsh man, typically. And my brother's quite tall. And I really, it's funny because some people have said when he walked in the room, they'd be like, oh, it's like he's in the room. And I'm so glad I don't, obviously, because I know my brother completely separately, because I think that would be torturous, like to constantly be reminded through my brother. But perhaps as he gets older, it will happen. It's hard. So you and your sister are very close.
Yeah.
So you're still kind of talking about it with her then? Like, you still kind of have... I'm guessing what I'm saying, Travis hasn't... It's not so painful people don't mention it. Or is it only your sister you're able to talk with it about?
No, we talk about him. Yeah, we talk about him all the time. And all of them, actually. There's not any of them where we've gone down the route of like, oh, let's pretend that didn't happen. Yeah, he gets brought up a lot, which I'm glad about, because you don't want to think that someone's existence has just been wiped out.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to believe that they carry on in some way. Maybe they do carry on in some way. I'm open to those discussions. I don't know. But yeah, he's not just gone. But it is still, if you open, I've still got his texts on my phone. I still have, it took me about a year to take his email off my laptop, because he was at the age where we just decided he could have a phone and we were going to set him up an email account. And so I said to him, look, Auntie Kaylee is setting you up a Gmail account, but it's going to be on my laptop as well. Because I was mostly doing it because I wanted to speak to him in London and he was in Wales. So I was like, but I'm going to have it on my laptop too. So just so you know, everything you send and receive, I will see. That's the kind of email you're going to have.
Good.
So I had that thing that every time you open the Google Home Stream, the top right corner said Travis.
Oh, God.
And that was about 6 weeks before he died. So there was 6 weeks of emails in there. There was from him to me and my sister. You know, just being like, can't wait to see you tonight. We're going to go to the cinema later. We're going ice skating. We're going to Winter Wonderland. You know, these like fun messages. And so every single time I opened Google, it was there. But it was almost like if I log that out, I'm letting go of his existence.
Yeah.
So I'll keep it there. And I actually didn't remove it. I updated my like user system at one point and it just logged out. I'd never actually got to the point of removing it myself.
Maybe that's, I don't know. Maybe
I think it's
good,
better. Yeah.
But the internet did it for you because, because although I think it's really important to remember them, there's also too much remembering, which I have sometimes with doing this podcast of being like, oh, geez, you know, like some days it'd be nice just not to.
Stop picking that scab.
The time. Like you said, sometimes you want to watch the film and just come out and not remember that you're in that club. Like just
for sure.
Have a break from it. So I imagine every time you're seeing Travis every day, that might have been a bit too much, like not even picking the scab, like salt and lemon juice and rubbing it in.
Like just knife on the arm.
Then that's not forgetting him in any way. It's just allowing you to work without having that reminder. So I want to talk about something. It's interesting. Because you keep saying, or you don't keep saying, but like the fact that you have a family member that went to psychic and stuff like that. So did you go to see a psychic about it?
Yeah.
You did, didn't you? And other members of family have been. Is that right?
Lots of us have been, which is why I won't say her name because I don't want to ruin her business. But
the one you don't trust?
Yeah. So she is this woman in Cardiff. And
is this the dodgy one or the good one?
It's one and the same.
Okay.
I don't know if she's dodgy or not, but I went, I think, the first time after my dad died. I just got, because I knew a few people in the area who'd seen her, said, oh, this woman's moved here and she's great. And I just, anyway, I wouldn't say I 100% believe in ghosts or I 100% believe in an afterlife, but I'm open.
Yeah.
And I'm very intrigued by it. Like, if anyone's ever like, oh, I think I've seen a ghost, I'm like, oh, sit down, start to finish. I want to
know. Get a brew and let's do it.
So I'm open to that stuff. So anyway, I found it comforting and I liked it and that was that. And then I left. And then obviously there was a lot more deaths after that. And a few of my other family members went, and we have such a big family that they're not necessarily, like, you know, they're going for their own business. So that was that. But there was an occasion. So after, this was what sucked me in. When my grandmother died, it was the 23rd of January, and it was a weekend. It was like, was it a Friday? I think it was a Friday, let's say. And she died in the evening. And so the coroner wasn't on to, like, on shift to sign her off and register her death and all of that. So she was in the morgue over the weekend. And we all go to this little side room in the hospital. She died in A&E of Heath Hospital in Cardiff. And she went into this little side room where they'd display the bodies, and we saw her there, and she went to the morgue. Little did we know that 2 days later, Travis was going to die in the same A&E of the same hospital and be displayed on the same bed in the same bloody side room. And so he died on a Sunday. So the coroner's still not in. And so it winds up that they're both in the same morgue. And so one of my aunties got this phone call. This particular psychic was, like, so in demand that you had to wait like 6 or 7 weeks for an appointment. And so she had one in like 2 months' time. It's just coincidentally, the day after, the Monday morning, she gets a call to be like, oh, this woman has had a slot open up. Do you want to come in today? And because we were all just reeling and we wanted any kind of comfort, she went, yeah, I'll come. And so she called me afterwards, and this woman had said, like, my granddad was already dead. And she was like, okay, I'm channeling your father, I should say, John. And he's saying, how's my Marge? How's my wife? And she was like, I can see your mum's spirit. I can tell that your mum's passed, hasn't she? But your granddad doesn't know that she's passed. She's not passing over into the other realm. She's staying because she's with a little boy. And she's saying she's scared. He's scared. She's not going to leave his side. She's going to be with him until he figures out that he's died. Because often when children die, the spirits of them, their spirit doesn't realize what's happened to them because they're so small. And so she said this thing, and there was a few other things that came up around that as well. But the thing that stuck with me is that previously with psychics, I've always gone, well, there's Google, there's the death register, there's that and the other. But I hadn't registered their deaths yet. I was going to be the one doing it in a couple of days' time. They were still in the morgue. And so the fact that my auntie walked in and she was just like, I know your mother's dead, but that she's not passed over and she's with the little boy, that sort of, like, I was like, hang on.
Yeah, that's definitely... I mean, yeah, I mean, let's start with saying I don't know how I feel. It's complicated. But yeah, that's definitely enough to, what's the word, like, hook you in. Sure. I would also
give
be like...
Give you pause for thought.
Oh, I'd be like, whoa, okay, that's interesting. Rather than like, oh, I'm getting a Trevor, or I'm getting a, you know, a David, a Jane.
T. Yeah. Could be the first letter, could be one of nine letters.
Yeah.
Could be the drink he liked.
Exactly. So there's definitely, that's juicy enough to make you go, oh, okay.
Yeah. And at the time, it was a comfort. And I think this is where I come down on psychics, is whether they're real, they're not, they're whatever. If they bring you comfort in a time when nothing else brings you comfort. And for me, the thought that... It sounds mad now because I've got, you know, I'm a few years on, but at the time, the thought that he had someone with him.
Yeah, of course.
And was like holding his hand and telling him that it was okay.
And his nan, like, who, you know, had looked after you all and was a good woman. And yeah, of course. It's completely comforting.
But also, you know, you say it out loud and you're like, oh, that sounds like the ramblings of a mad person. But at the time, my auntie told me, and I remember just being like, oh, thank God, you know. And then I left it like a month or something, and I went to see her again. And this was the other thing that gave me pause for thought. So at the time, it must have been about 2 months later. So my grandmother's house, we'd emptied out and we were going to rent it out because we were like, my whole family, my aunties and uncles grew up there their whole life. Mm. They'd had the house for like 60 years. Just a small, like, semi-detached council house kind of thing, but it was the house. And they still all live nearby and they drive past it every day. And they're just like, we can't imagine a world where we drive past that house and it's not ours. So we're not going to sell it. We'll rent it out. So it was emptied. And because I don't live in Cardiff now, I wanted to see her, but I had nowhere to do it. So I was like, I could just do it in, like, my nan's house. And in my head, I was like, that actually might be quite good because there's absolutely no tells or giveaways right now because the house is completely empty. Like, I had to bring two fold-away chairs to sit on because there was nothing there. And so anyway, she comes into this house and I just said, oh, it's my house. Like, I've just moved in. I just, like, bullshitted. And so, yeah, my grandmother's lounge had... So you, when you first walk through the... This is so boring to explain over on the radio. But you first walk through the front door and there was a door on the left that would lead into the lounge. And she always kept that door sealed.
Right, yeah.
And then you'd walk through the kitchen and there was another entrance to the lounge and she would keep that one open. But because the house was empty, my whole life, that first door was always sealed.
Yeah.
But now both doors were empty. And so we sat on these two chairs and she pops her music on. With, you know, she's giving me some crystals to hold and all that malarkey. And within about 5 minutes, she was like, oh, I've been told that that door that's open right there needs to be shut. Your nana says she always has that door shut. She doesn't want it open. Can you get up and shut it
for
her?
Oh, my God.
And so that was a bit of it. That, then I was just like, oh.
Yeah, because even I feel a bit like, well, okay.
Yeah.
And I don't want, it's really hard for me because when it happened, obviously, when I was 15, I would have loved that to, I really, like you said, that urge and that need to believe there's somewhere I can talk to them that's real. And I think I didn't go to anything like that. And but then 20 years on, I'm very cynical about it in a way that surprises me for someone who grew up holding crystals and angel cards and a lot of stuff. But I think I've talked about this, but my uncle and aunt, so my dad's brother, I don't quite know how involved it, but they go to a church, a spiritualist church, or I'm probably saying the wrong phrase, I'm sorry. Anyway, they occasionally have psychics at this church.
Right.
And a couple of times they have said, oh, your dad was there and stuff. And one, I found it very scary.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, if he's there, can he be anywhere? Like, whoa.
Yeah. That, where's he now?
Yeah, that to me, it suddenly opened up this, like, if that's true, then what the fuck else is true? Because, like, if he can pop along to this church in Swindon or whatever, then can he just fucking turn up when I'm watching things?
Is he on the train? How's he getting down there?
Yeah, exactly. Like, is he watching me when I'm sleeping? That's creepy. So I found it scary, which I think is a good thing, because I'm definitely someone who would have really gone down that road.
Mm.
Like, I think I'm a very addictive personality, and I'm quite good at sensing, like, don't do that, you'll become a junkie. Like, so I could sort of sense it with, like, the psychics, like, don't do that, you'll really believe
it. You'll have no self-control.
Yeah, and so I stayed away from it a lot. And then a couple of years ago, my uncle rang me up, and I don't talk to him very regularly, but he rang me up and he said, oh, you know, how are you? And I said, I'm fine, yeah. And he said, oh, you're like, your dad's been in touch. I was like, right?
Goodness.
And a psychic. And it was just like a really funny name. And she was from like, just somewhere like really fun. Like everything about it was funny. Like I want to say like Sandra from Swindon or something. It was something that you go,
classic.
You're like, if I was writing a sketch about that, I'd change it because I think that was a bit much.
Yeah.
And they said that she had been in touch and that she had a warning for me that I wasn't well. And this was like 2 years ago. Yeah. And I, at the time, so immediately he told me, I was like, oh, okay, maybe that's useful. And then I was like, no, I don't think that's okay.
Mm.
Because the more I thought about it, the more I was like, if my dad was going to get in touch, that would be a really shitty thing to tell me. Or there'd be better ways
begin
of...
Begin with hello.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Like, exactly. Or why has he got in touch with Sandra from Swindon and not me? Like, and it's hard because it's definitely something I think, yeah, you said it can bring comfort, but I think there are people that obviously make money out of people's pain. And I'm now, for someone who isn't cynical, for someone who, like you, is like open to everything, I get really worried about those people because I'm in that club and because I know how vulnerable you can be. And I remember speaking to you about it just after you'd seen her, I think, and I was being quite negative and it was comforting you, and I could tell, I was like, Carrie, I just let it go. Let her have it. But I was like, but because it scares me,
yes,
and because of what happened with my uncle, that I was like, and then there was one time they drew a picture of my dad, someone drew a picture of a psychic, and this picture turned up they gave me, which was like just a bearded man. Beard like once, but
like, he's grown it in now.
Yeah.
Funny, you could see him.
How do you feel now? So she gave you that reading then at the time, obviously. Like, that's some good stuff, she said.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not taking that away.
And I boil it down into, in that, it brought me so much comfort right then when I needed it and when nothing else was comforting me. And I remember toing and froing in my mind, is it real? Is it not? Is it real? Is it not? And I came down on the side of like, nothing else is soothing you right now.
Yeah.
And in a world where that piece of knowledge might soothe you, just allow it.
Yeah, definitely.
And part of me, like, I don't know. I like remaining open. I like believing that the universe is completely vast and we, as humans, are not equipped to understand the vast majority of it. We physically cannot. And so I want to remain that. With this particular woman, I think she said a few things that I absolutely, in my like rational brain, cannot find a way that she knows them.
Yeah.
She said some other things that I think, after, I was one of the first people to see her, and I think in the months after, she's seen my family members and they report stuff back, and I'm like, I told her that.
Yeah.
She's regurgitating a piece of information that I told her.
Yeah.
So then I'm like, well, does she have a bit, does she have an ability, but there's not that much chat with the spirits that she can keep enough info going for everyone beating her door down?
Yeah.
But then there were some other things, like I remember she told, at the time, again, I was completely sucked in about this, but she'd seen a cousin of mine around the time, and this cousin fed back to me that so she mentioned Travis's death, and this is something that struck me as being true, but now I told my girlfriend about it the other day, being like, oh, this happened before, and I actually think it was bloody awful that she said it. So when we saw Travis after he'd passed away, he had a mark on his cheek. Oh, God, I'm sorry, this is such a grim story, but, you know, as you're with him for a bit longer and the body starts to change colour, this mark on his face got darker and darker. And because I don't know, you're just in complete panic mode, and I'm stood there thinking that my whole world is gone and nothing makes sense anymore. The only thing I could cling on to was asking this question, what happened to his face? What happened to his face?
Yeah, yeah.
And no one knew because he died on his own. So it was like, well, we'll never know, but something happened to his face. And so then she sees my cousin and she says to my cousin, oh, Travis is here and he's holding his face. His face hurts. He's saying, ow, ow, ow. And then she said, oh, as he was having an asthma attack, he fell and he cracked his head and it's really hurting him still. And that was a piece of information that I was like, how did she know that?
Yeah, yeah.
On his death certificate, it just says asthma. It doesn't say, you know, because I'm still going, how do you find that information out? But then she said this other thing to my cousin where she was like, apparently she started crying during the reading. And she said, I'm sorry, I never do this, but it was an awful death. And my cousin told me that information. And at the time, again, I was just at the point of grief where I was right in the thick of it and everything was just... everything felt like a punch to the face.
But that is a punch to the face.
Yeah.
Like that fucking, that's what makes me angry. Like,
why
does she say that?
And because if it's not true, it's not, why say it? Other than does it lure people in?
And even if it is, you know what, even if it's fact, what use is that information in terms of healing? And it's a really complicated issue. And I I have friends who are like militant atheists. My husband like thinks all of this is just utter bullshit. Mm. And I find that, I'm like, oh, come on, we don't know. But when I hear stuff like that, I do get really angry because I feel like, look, some of us believe in some really weird things and we don't need people like you making the weird things look weirder.
Please don't mug us off.
Yeah, come on, because it's already hard enough to defend what we believe to the rational people.
Yeah.
And you're making us seem... For her to say that, I feel if she has the magical ability and she knows that, does anyone need to know that?
Have like, a sensor.
What good is that information? And also, who defines awful? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what does that mean? Like, is Travis's spirit saying that? Well, is that because he fell over and he hurt himself? But then we're talking about someone who isn't alive. So how can he, you know what I mean? You get into such blurry lines. And that's why I'm scared of it. Because I feel like, this is the truth, right? I have to really hold on to the fact that my dad's dead. Like, I have to keep telling myself that. That's why I do this show. Because I think my imagination can very easily turn it into something else or, you know, not believe it. I think I have a little part of my brain that's like, la, 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 everything's fine, everyone's alive. So I have to keep being like, Carrie Ed, he's dead, that happened to you. And I think as soon as they open that door, I'm like, so can he still feel pain? If you're crying now, does that mean he's still in pain? Like, because it sort of blurs that line, doesn't it, of dead and alive. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really, I do think that's a bit dangerous.
It's irresponsible.
It's irresponsible. I'll get you right.
As well. And right. Because I think, like, I can imagine if I'm a psychic now and either I have genuine ability or I believe I have ability but I really don't, or I have no ability at all but I've found myself a craft.
Yeah.
There, I guess, are the three options. I imagine all three of them in their mind go, I bring people comfort.
Yeah.
People who can find comfort nowhere else find comfort in me, so... Say what you want about my profession, but I do a good thing. And I buy that.
Yeah.
I buy it absolutely. But then when they feed information like that, or like your uncle calling you and going, your dad from beyond the grave says you're ill.
Yeah, he said like, and I found that really difficult. He was like, oh, you know, your dad is saying like he's worried about you. And I was like, I'm an anxious person anyway. So now you immediately may think I'm
Give it a rest, please.
I'm dying of cancer and my dad from beyond the grave is the only one who knows. But also like, as my mum pointed out when I told my mum, she was like, well, he wasn't a bloody doctor, was he? So how does he fucking know? And I was like, yeah, that's also true. And I was like, it really, if you have one message, you've waited 20 years to tell me. And again, it's like, if you have one message from Travis, if you can speak to him, is that
the
message?
Most pressing thing?
And you know Travis, she didn't know him. Would that be the thing Travis would want to say to you? Like, you know how he communicated and all of that stuff. Like, would that be the thing that he'd go, oh, that's, I've got one chance, the door is open.
No, he'd have said, can I have a go on the Xbox?
Exactly.
That's what he would have said.
If she'd said that, that's the thing.
I'd have been sucked in.
Yeah. And I think that's true. It's like, because it's a bit like we were talking about today, like whenever someone believes they were reincarnated, they're never like, oh, I was, you know, Joan Parkinson who worked in a factory. They're like, I was Cleopatra.
Oh, yeah, there was a big dick.
Yeah, there's big. Because that's exciting. And I think that's the thing of like, if psychics could tell you the minutiae, like if it was like, oh, your dad got in touch and he's working constantly, and he's upset that he can't get a new deal, I'd be like, oh, that sounds right.
But for him to go, you've got him right, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like if he said, can I have gone next, or I miss my Xbox, then you might have been like, oh.
Legit.
But yeah, I don't think as ever it's a binary issue, because I do think she did give you comfort. And I completely understand that, like saying that your nana was with him, like, oh, yeah, that makes my heart feel better for him. Like, and maybe that is true, but then maybe the other stuff is wrapped up in her imagination. Who knows? But you have to protect yourself, don't you?
I think you have to take what brings you comfort and try to disregard the rest.
Yeah.
And don't get caught up in it. Like, I've not been again. I won't say I'll never go again.
Yeah.
But I might try and do something where I'm just like... Like, I went once quite a few years ago now when no one had died, just because I was, like, curious about my future. And I was at Camden Market and I saw someone with a sign up. Yeah. And I was like, I'm just going to go in because he won't even know my name. Like, there's no way he can Google me. And that situation appeals to me.
Yeah.
Because if I can sit down with a complete stranger and they haven't had a chance to go on a computer.
Yeah, that's true.
And then they can give me something meaty.
Yeah, in the age of the internet. Like,
it's hard.
If you book, what's the name, please? Kaylee Llewellyn. I'll see you next Wednesday.
There's not that many Kaylee Llewellyns either.
Yeah.
You'd have to sift through many, would you?
Yeah, okay. Well, I think it's interesting. And I said, I'm not like, I know people who think they're evil and you should never, but I don't. I don't think that. I just think it's... go in carefully, I guess.
Yeah.
I think that's what I remember trying to say to you very badly at the time, of like, just be careful. Like, just make sure that you don't... I guess what I've seen in the past as well is people get addicted.
Yes.
And they want to keep speaking to that person. And that's what I think I'd get addicted to. And then you're not talking to your dad or your nephew. You're talking to some woman who thinks that she's your 12-year-old nephew or your dad.
Some woman literally in a council flat in Cardiff. Like,
I mean, you could do that without... paying for it, just, you know, knock on someone's door.
Yeah,
like, can I have a chat?
Exactly.
Can I have a chat, please?
Yes. So I don't know. I guess I remain completely not knowing, but cynical.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd.
So you're coming up to, have you just had a load of anniversaries then, since we just had April?
Yes, well, so my brother and my dad are in April, Travis and my nan are in January. So my granddad's will be the next one this month, the 25th of June. But I'm finding, one thing for me about anniversaries that I'm realising is that it's always the thought of the thing is worse than the thing.
So much worse. So much. The week before, I find, like, agonising.
Yeah.
The day itself, normally all right. And then the day after, completely fine. Like,
yeah. And it's also, I spend a couple of weeks being like, you are going to feel so bad.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine how bad you're going to feel, which in turn makes me feel awful. And then the day comes around and I'm like, oh, thank God it's just done.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm trying to put less stake on anniversaries in that sense, other than using them as an opportunity to, like, do something that they would have liked to have done on that day or whatever, you know. So make it something nice anyway. Like, we've planted a tree in Travis's memory at Victoria Park. So that's a really nice thing that I get to do, is to just go and sit there on a sunny day.
Yeah.
And see this, like, nice thing. And so that the times of grief can, I don't know, that you can look for, you can find a way to do a lovely thing so it doesn't log itself in your muscle memory as horror. Ah, it's almost like burn. Ooh, don't touch that. It's going to burn. It's going to hurt. Instead, I can be like, oh, maybe I'll get like a nice cookie and a sandwich and a drink and a little picnic and I'll sit by the tree. And it becomes a less horrifying thought.
I definitely think making an excuse to have a nice day.
Yeah.
So then also you don't have to feel bad. You're just feel like, oh, I should be working, or I should be like, no, today's the day I'm going to like see my family or see my loved ones and, yeah, make it positive without necessarily being like, we are remembering.
Everybody wear black.
Yeah, exactly.
5 minutes silence.
Yeah, like I had the 20th anniversary this year and I found
God, 20 years.
I know. It's unbelievable.
Massive.
I found this anniversary really hard in a way that I didn't expect to find it that hard, but for about 2 months, I felt I could feel, I described it to my therapist, I could just feel it coming towards me, like a big fucking black hole, like just like this horrible sticky mess, and me, and like almost like every day being like, ugh, a little bit closer to that fucking mess.
Yeah.
Being like, and then the day itself was fine. It wasn't nice, but it wasn't awful. It was just nothing. And I saw my mum and I was with my daughter and we just had a chilled out day and we both just didn't make a thing, which was really good. And then, like, the day afterwards, I honestly felt, I felt like I'd done, you know, like, that horrible exam.
Yeah, it's
I
like felt relief. Like,
I'm done, I'm free, because it'll never have to be 20 years again.
Yeah.
And I think, I obviously, every, you know, every year is a new experience, and I'm so used to kind of, the beginning anniversaries are hard. 1 to 5, tough. Mm-hmm. And then 5 to 10, I think, well, it's, yeah, obviously everyone's different, but I think there's that, definitely I felt from, like, 15 to 19, it was a bit like, well, is it 15, is it 7, who knows,
I can't remember,
it's just time. But 20 to me just seemed really like such an official number.
It's a significant one and it makes you address everything. Big numbers like that. But I also think, I try to remind myself with anniversaries and all of that, that they are just figments of our own imagination.
Yeah.
One, time is a construct.
True.
But two, I mean, if
that
you...
That much we do know.
That much we do know. But two, if you... Yes, of course, they're momentous in the sense that they bring you to a place where you go, this time last year, I was.
Yeah.
This time 2 years ago, I was doing such and such. But if we, for some reason, had, like, the norovirus in the preceding days and we fell asleep for 24 hours and woke up and the anniversary was gone, it would mean nothing. It would register nowhere.
Yeah.
Because everything that we hang on it and everything about it that makes us believe that it's momentous is all created in our own minds.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that we have the power to completely, like, mind over matter with it. But there's this, like, thing about anxiety, you know, that, like, if you're holding a glass half full of water for 30 seconds, it would feel like nothing. If you held it for an hour, it would start to hurt. If you held it for a day, you'd be crippled with agony.
Yeah.
And when it comes to anxiety, they say, you know, put the glass down for a minute. The glass still exists. The water still exists.
I'm trying, guys. I'm trying so hard to put the glass down.
Put it down. And I tried to think that, like, put it down.
Yeah.
It's not... Okay, there's a mark in the calendar that says it was 1 year, but if I choose not to attach all of these things in my own brain, if I choose to not do those, I don't know if this is healthy or not, the way I approach it, but just because I don't want to dread every day
of course.
In the way
and
I have previously.
You've got a load of anniversaries
Bitch
to deal with.
Be busy. I can't do it because you've got their birthdays, you've got their death days, you've got the day that you found out they were sick, you know, or days of their funerals. And the next thing you know,
there's not a day free.
I've got no time.
Yeah. ain't nobody got time.
Yeah. So, but that's
I
what
know,
I try.
I think, because that's the thing, I totally agree with you. And I think perhaps there's a similarity in our stories in a way, in that, like, I've had a long time and you've had a lot. So I think maybe you're further down the line than if it was just one death, because you've had to deal with so much.
Yes.
So I think there's nothing wrong with worrying about the anniversaries at all. But I agree with you, because I've been doing it for 20 years. I was annoyed. Like, I was like, fuck, really? Again? Mm-hmm. I have to, like, do... I did this year's 1 to 5.
Like, yeah, I've got to dredge this
you
up.
You know, and it comes and goes. But my husband said something really interesting the other day. He said... I thought it was interesting. He said...
I'll let you know if I agree.
Yeah, sure. Something came on the radio and it was his birthday. Like something, in 1966 on his birthday. And he was like, ooh, that's my birthday. In the way that you do when someone says your birthday and something important happened. And then he was laughing himself because he was like, those days aren't connected. We've made the connection. We've made years and weeks and months that I feel like, oh, because something happened with, you know, in communist Russia or in October, that's... the same as me. And it's like, those days have nothing in common. They're miles away from each other, but we place patterns on everything. Because we were talking about anniversaries as well. And he was like, yes, as you said, there is that connection, but there also isn't at exactly the same time. Mm-hmm. And I think that is important to remember, so that you don't, like you said, hang on to the glass till your fingers are breaking.
Yeah.
It's important to remember them and acknowledge them and all of that. But equally, that day actually has nothing to do with what you were doing last year. Like,
for sure. Yeah. And but it makes sense to me that as humans with what we believe to be big brains, but probably in the grand scheme of things, pretty minuscule brains. Like I heard the other day, I didn't know orca whales have more emotions than humans do.
What?
They can register more emotions than
That's
we
can. That's
why
I don't call the orca whale anymore, because he is too much.
He's oh so my emo, God. Man. But, you know, we always have this idea that we are the most intelligent. We are the most heightened. We are the epitome. And I don't necessarily believe that we are, but so I think with our brains as they are, we try to find order in chaos.
Yeah, definitely.
And death by its very nature is chaos. It's completely out of control. I have this print up in my room that says elephant chooses to stand on your car, because to me that just means something bigger can come along and take what you loved. It's not yours anymore. It doesn't exist. Goodbye. Yeah. That's it. Something better has taken it away. But it makes sense to me that humans go, is there a pattern there? Is there a rhythm? Is there, like, the other week I was like, oh, fuck, I can't believe Donald Trump is a Gemini. Why am I wasting my airtime speaking about that? Because I'm a Gemini too. What? So I'm Donald Trump. No, they're not linked. But my stupid petty brain is trying to find.
I am annoyed about that for you, though.
Oh, thank you. Giving us all a bad name. But yeah, we try to find order and chaos.
Definitely. And we've said this before, like, that's what we said, like, death and sickness, and especially what you have with Travis, that extreme, out of nowhere, life being there and then gone, is so shocking and so confusing. And that's how I felt for so long, because I was just like, what do you mean he's dead? My dad's dead. Like, what do you mean?
Mm.
So that's why psychics always scared the shit out of me, because I was like, whoa, I'm still getting my head around the fact that he's dead. Don't start saying he's not. Like, fucking hell.
Don't throw a bloody curveball at
exactly,
me.
Exactly. Like, I'm not ready for that. And I think, of course we look for patterns. Like, I think, like you said, it's just a very hard thing to negotiate, because you want to be comforted and you want to find peace, but you also want to stay sane and, you know, not lose your brain over it.
Mm.
So it's... I feel like sometimes it's just an ever-changing process. And like you said, I think that's really interesting. Things that work for you year one don't work for you year two. Like, you have to be aware of, like, stuff, shit changes.
Systems got to evolve.
Yeah.
It was in September last year, one of my really dear friends, her boyfriend passed away.
Yeah.
And so he'd been diagnosed, he was only 35, he'd been diagnosed with cancer a few months before. The suggestion was that he's young, he's healthy, we caught it, you know, we'll work on it. And then, like that, he was gone. And that was strange then to feel, well, that was a different kind of death that I hadn't experienced before.
Yeah.
And he was just a wonderful, lovely, delightful human being and the love of my friend's life. And they just bought their first house together a few months before. And the fact that they could be, you know, in Christmas moving in and so excited. And by the September, he'd been snatched away. And I remember just feeling like, okay, now I'm angry.
Yeah. This,
and I also, like, I know that, because I say it to myself all the time, we have no control. But all of my friends in London, travelling home to Cardiff for his funeral, and we were all just looking at each other like, this isn't how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
We're all 30, and we are constantly crying in a car, holding hands together as we go home to bury someone we love. And I don't think it is okay
yeah.
that we've had to bury so many people at this age, and I certainly didn't expect it. But for my friend, you know, watching her go through the loss, it's just having that whole life snatched away from her. I was angry. I was like, this isn't, why is this allowed? Why is this okay?
I know, it's so shit. It's so shit.
There's, yeah.
It's just but fucking awful. Do you think there was some of that anger of Travis's death coming out in that? Or did you think they were very separate?
Maybe, yeah, because I certainly, you know, if ever there's time when it's not about you, it's when someone else is going through that. But it was definitely like, you know, going home to be with her in the aftermath and just being beyond devastated for her. But I suppose there's also like that, I don't, you know, when you're young and you have your first proper heartbreak and it is all encompassing and painful for so long, and the only thing that makes it go away is time. And until then, you're just in agony. I feel like grief is a bit, well, grief is far worse than that, but just as an analogy. Being with her and sort of seeing her desolation and in my mind being like, I know nothing is going to make this better.
Yeah.
But also that said, if anyone does ever feel guilty that they know someone who they love who's grieving and they feel like they're handling it badly, I've been through six. I felt like I kind of knew. I still think I handled it badly around her. Like,
oh,
I still
God.
Get bungling everything. And then I've just been like, what? You know, don't do that. Why are you doing that?
Oh, don't. Like, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm the go-to grief girl. I'll tell you what to do. And then I found myself, my very good friend, her boyfriend recently lost his mum. And I was like, you must come over. You must come over and we'll eat and we'll just, you know, have a great time. We'll talk about death. And I didn't bring it up once. Oh. And I have written articles about talking about it. And to be fair, it just didn't really come up. And I don't know him as well as her, so I was like, you know, if it was her, of course I'd be right in there. And I closed the door on them and I was like, oh, that was so nice. I didn't ask him about his mum. Like, what the fuck? I'm the person, like, talk about it, don't hide about it. But I think yeah, it just because you've dealt with it all the time doesn't mean you, and I felt like a bit like with you, because when Travis was so young and I was like, oh, not in my toolbox.
Yeah.
I am so, you want to talk about dads and grandparents? Like, sure, I got it. And when your pain over Travis, I was like, oh, this is new. And my friend also lost her son. I think he was about 21, but yeah, still, that was the first time I really was like, oh, I now understand how people feel when I talk about my dad's death. Like, I was like, oh God, I want to leave the room. Oh God, this is so awful. Yeah. Like, whereas when I've seen that on people's faces, I was like, oh, what's wrong with you? You know, where's your, just fucking, this is life. But
toughen up.
Yeah, but
it does give you a newfound understanding, though, that on the whole, everyone means well.
Mm.
And they might completely fuck it up.
Yeah.
And they package it in the wrong way and they do something stupid and they get on your nerves, or sometimes they're actively like offensive in their attempts.
Yeah, that does also happen, yeah.
Definitely had a couple of those. But everybody's heart is in the right place. Yeah. They're all just going, how can I connect with you? Yeah. How can I comfort you? I'm so sorry, I got it wrong.
Yeah. And I think that's it, because we don't talk about it enough. It's sometimes hard to communicate that back of like, oh, that was, you sort of got that wrong.
Mm.
Like, it's like, even that phrase is shit. But like, I think, like, you know, we talk about heartbreak, so you sort of know if someone's heartbroken, like, oh, these are things that might help, or I'll talk to you. But because we don't talk about death, when someone does say something offensive or awkward or weird, it's very hard to address it.
Yes.
Because I feel like they tried. That was probably very difficult for them. So if I slam the door, they might never ask anyone ever again.
Yes, don't put them off ever being in comfort.
Yeah. So sometimes they've, you know, done it very inappropriately with me and I've had to be like, oh, it's really painful what you just said, but because I want you to carry on asking your friends about death, I'm going to have to take it for the team.
It's weird that when you're the grieving one, you often have to be the bigger person.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But then I guess you're the one... When you're in it, things are clearer. Things are slightly clearer. That's what I found. When
you have a clarity. It's interesting, though, talking about the heartbreak thing, because I definitely had that heartbreak is easier to understand in a way, because on the whole, if we're adults, we've all had a heartbreaking at some point. And I, after all of the deaths... I should start calling this, like, AD and BD. after all of the deaths, I... started dating a girl, Emily, who's now my long-term girlfriend, but at the time we just started dating. When was it? It was September 2016. So the final death had been April 2016.
Yeah, I remember it being very
still
close,
new, still
yeah.
raw. And we'd only been going out about, well, we'd been dating for like 6 weeks, but it was different. You know, when you're like, oh, this is, in my mind, I was like, this is going to be big. She's everything I've been waiting for. And that had separate issues as well that... it's probably worth mentioning in terms of like the process of grief that I found it really, really difficult to fall in love initially and meet someone like that and believe, I don't know, be vulnerable with someone else and let your guard down. My body, I had the first few times I stayed at her house, I had anxiety attacks. And this is someone that like I'd known for 2 weeks and I wouldn't normally expose myself in that way. Or be vulnerable in that way around someone who I wasn't really, really close with. And so, like, I just kept, like, booking Ubers home from her house and being at, like, 5 a.m. and being mortified. And my therapist was like, yeah, your body is saying, don't fall in love again. She will die. Anyway, so we had this sort of intense 6 weeks where I was like, I'm pretty sure this is really amazing, but it's got its tricky aspects and whatever. And then Emily broke up with me. She was like, you know, she for many reasons, she was just like, I don't know, I just don't know if this is right now, maybe we should be friends. And I freaked out. Yeah. Like, I remember going home that night, and bear in mind, this is a woman that I've known for 6 weeks and we've dated. Never knew of her before. 6 weeks. I went home that night and I remember laying in bed, didn't sleep a wink. And I felt the way I felt when I buried Travis.
Yeah.
Like, I had all the same bodily reactions. My heart was racing. I was freezing cold. I was shivering and all these things. And in my head, I kept being like, you don't really know her. Mm. It's been 6 weeks. And on the next breath, I could be like, but I do think she's supposed to be someone special. And so anyway, this went on for quite a few weeks. And I, from where I'd gone from losing all my family members and not really wanting to talk about it and like going out and not communicating with that many people and... I was so different on this. I was like, call my agent. Can we meet for a coffee? I'm going through a hard time. You know, like friends I haven't seen for ages. Or like, I remember me and my best friend, Matt, who write together, we were working and I had to just get up and keep leaving the room and go for a walk around the block because I was like, I'm so anxious. I'm not coping and blah, blah, blah. Or like I'd walk into an improv gig and someone would be like, how are you? And I'd be like, oh, my life's over and everything's shit. and I was being so much more open than I'd ever been before. And then Matt, wise old soul, at one point said to me, do you think that you're grieving for your family now and being public with it? Because heartbreak is a language that everyone understands.
It doesn't make people feel uncomfortable.
You can talk about it over a drink. Yeah. Everybody wants to hear. Everyone can offer you advice. And the way you just kept the death silent, you're getting it all out now.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, half and half. I was like, on one hand, I think Emily got it wrong and we are meant to be together forever.
Yeah.
But also, I think you're right. And obviously now me and Emily are back together and that's all.
And she was wrong.
And she was wrong. I think that is the takeaway.
No, but I think that's really interesting because people with heartbreak can give you solace. They can say, you'll get over it. I know it feels bad. It'll be all right. And you can't do that with grief. I remember when you came to me at the start of that journey and I remember thinking, oh, I'll have to tell her it's all right, but obviously she'll find out in a year it won't be. Because it's like, what can you do when someone's like, oh, I feel better? And you're like, yeah, you will, but you also won't. So, you know, you just go, of course you will. Look at me, I'm fine. Because you have to offer them, I was the psychic at that point going, I'm just going to tell you the things you need to hear. But with heartbreak, with grief, there isn't that happy narrative, which I talk about all the time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, I guess, can go, yes, you know, I thought they were love of my life, but then I found this person and then everything was great. They can't go, my dad died, then another dad came along.
Suddenly, even better dad appeared. Yeah. It doesn't pan out, does it?
And he was actually a lot more around. And yeah. it's worked out really well.
Just a sensitive, good man. Yeah. We had a lot of hugs.
And just think, if the first one hadn't died, I wouldn't have met that one. Like, you don't have that with members of your family.
Yeah.
So, of course, you're able to express it in a way that's... And it's kind of gross because I know what that means, because it's kind of like acceptable. Like people are not going to go. And especially, I think, because your situation was so extreme, I think people just did not know what to say, did they? If you're like, oh, well, I've had six deaths. It's like, I could cope with a cool. grandparent. I can't
it's
say.
It's definitely a conversation stopper. And as someone who enjoys a chat, I don't like bringing it up. But when it comes to heartbreak, I was like, I was all over. I was all over town running my gums. Like anyone who would listen. I remember chatting to you and your mum about it.
Yes, I know. Yeah, yeah.
The first time I met your baby and just been like, who won't listen to this story? And it was just
perhaps
so
also,
alien.
Like you said, it's a way of getting sympathy that you weren't happy to do with the deaths.
Yeah.
Because that feels so vulnerable and too much and too painful when people start, because I do feel like you feel like you've got no skin.
Mm-hmm.
So when people start patting you, like you're patting muscle and flat. Like
stop.
What, stop. It actually hurts. But yeah, so we were all able to go, oh, Kaylee, I'm so sorry, that's so awful. And you were able to like get us to give you love and comfort, but it was not about death. So it felt like a very safe way of...
Yeah, and I think as a person anyway, like my struggle has always been, I do not like weakness.
Yeah.
I do not like showing weakness. I don't like sympathy. I don't like being perceived as a vulnerable person. And so throughout the deaths, when people do that, I'd be like, well, I'm absolutely fine. So please... take that sympathetic pat and place it somewhere else. Good day.
But then
good day to you, sir. But then when it came to heartbreak, because people have their heart broken and it's not vulnerable, it's the stuff of every single song, great film and TV show. And it's a like, I don't know, to be like the lesbian about town and this woman broke my heart. It's a satisfying narrative.
Yeah.
And I think I felt able to break down a little bit in public and not feel weak. Just be like, well, I'm the same as everyone here. We've all been heartbroken.
Yeah, it's
so
normal.
So listen to me.
Perhaps well. Like, it's normal because what you have, like you said, what you went through wasn't normal. Was slightly, at the extreme end of grieving. Whereas this was like, I got my heart broken by a pretty lady. Like, who hasn't been here?
Yeah. I got so much airtime out on it, man. I feel like I was running into people in the street and, you know, that usual, how are you, as you walk by?
Yeah.
And we all know that you're supposed to go, fine, thanks, even if you're not. And I'd be like, awful! come back. I gotta tell you something.
She broke out with me.
Okay, I'll call you. I'll meet you in Superdrug.
I'll come in. We both have the same problem, which we have talked about, of like, I am exactly the same. I fucking hate being weak, and I see vulnerability as a weakness.
Mm.
I don't know where that comes from. Way back in your childhood, I think that gets programmed in. And my entire therapy has been about going, it's okay to be vulnerable. And I'm like, what? No, and I think for grief, that's hard because grieving makes you the most vulnerable possible.
Mm.
It really does. And heartbreak makes you vulnerable in a way that this, I just feel like it doesn't strip you of complete, like, and I remember when I broke up with my boyfriend, who's now my husband, and I was the Emily in this situation. He was very upset. And I remember thinking at the time, why is he so upset? I'm not dead. Like, I couldn't get my head around it. He was like, this is awful. And I was like, I breathe and I'm here. It is not the end of the world.
Also, the arrogance of you that like, I'm still alive. Why are you sad?
Yeah, because I was like, we could still talk.
You can still see Cariad from afar.
Exactly. I was like, what is your problem? Like, I literally was like, it can't be that bad. Because I feel like once you know that door exists, you're like, once someone's dead, they're fucking dead. Like, there isn't any, you can't shout at them. You can't send them their belongings back in a bin bag via their brother. I'm over it.
I'm sure your husband must have been as well. Like, I know that you're alive, but I'm in love with you and you don't want to be with me in my home anymore.
But I just had no understanding of that. Absolutely no understanding. And I did see it again of like, I won't be vulnerable.
Mm.
And I think, it's just allowing yourself to be vulnerable, I think, is a big part of the healing process of going, something happened and I do feel scared and I do feel weak. And a lot of that anxiety, which we both have, is trying to stop vulnerability just existing.
Yes.
Like, so if I'm stressed and I'm worried, I'm not vulnerable. I mean, I'm up at 3 a.m. thinking, I've locked every single window and I'm checking them again, but I'm not vulnerable.
I'm just taking care of the house.
Yes, I'm on it. I'm actually really useful. I'm actually quite a useful person.
Thank God everyone else in this house can sleep soundly because I'm here being strong. That's something my therapist said that to me, and it really has stayed with me. And it's one of those things I 100% believe it's taken me a bit of time to action.
Yes.
Still working on it.
Yeah.
But I remember her saying to me, like, stop thinking that the thing you need to aim for is strength. There's a brittleness to strength. That's not what we want. What we want to aim for is resilience. And so she was like, if you can reframe that in your mind, so instead of needing to be the strong one, you need to be the resilient one, which within that means you can crash and you can break down, but you will claw your way back up. And that should be the thing we aim for. We allow ourselves those moments of desolation. And then we take pride in the fact that 2 days later we can emerge being like, bitch is back. Guess who? Back. Still, I got a groove back. And I really liked that because I have had this fixation my whole life on being the strong one. And like I say, I 100% believe that. But I think changing the habits of a lifetime takes time.
Oh, yeah. Massive. And I've had the same with the vulnerability of, like, you know, it's okay to be vulnerable. Like, and I'm like, sure, I get it. Mm. But my putting it in action is really, because I will literally do anything to stop it. Like, whether it's literally obsessively doing the washing up or email or anything to be like, well, I'm not vulnerable. I'm just over here being very, very active, getting shit done. And I think that's a really nice twist on words, reframing on words to say resilient, because resilient does allow for rain to get in.
Mm.
Like, shit can come and go, but it's still there. Whereas strength, like you said, it there's a stubbornness to strength. It doesn't move when it needs, and sometimes things do need to move. Sometimes, like you said, you do know those days.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's hard, isn't it? It's just a journey.
There's a thing about that strength as well. Like, same very, very wise therapist, I remember her saying to me, like, around this fixation on being the strong one, she was like, what does that mean to you when you think of yourself as the strong one? I'm like, well, I want a situation where the people I love know they can rely on me.
Yeah.
I got their back. I'm going to look out for them. If things go badly for them, then there is this, like, I will be a rock for them.
Mm.
And they can lean on me and things like that. And she was like, that's absolutely lovely. But how do you think it feels for your friends if they have broken down in front of you and they've opened up and they've leaned on you? How do you think it feels for them if you never return the favor?
Yeah.
If you never are vulnerable and you never lean on them? Because as humans, we're pack animals, we're a community. We want to be there for the ones we love. We want to take care of the ones we love. And she's like, she said, you're not knowingly being selfishness, but there is a selfish element in withholding that from your friends who love you, who want to take care of you, and you refuse to give them it.
Mm.
And it sort of almost like limits your relationship if you don't have that push and pull.
And I mean, I hate to say it, but that sounds like a Gemini trait. Because then there's always like 10% of you that your friend doesn't get.
Yeah.
And also this crap thing is your friend knows. Your friend is like, I know that you're not okay.
And they feel crap that you don't trust them.
Yeah, you do. You feel a bit like, oh, I guess they don't trust me. And in your head, I think you assume, I guess they're talking to someone else.
Mm.
I guess maybe I'm not the right person, but I'm sure they're talking to someone. Not believing like, nope, not talking to anyone. Keeping my shit together because otherwise I'll crumble.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I know it's such a cliche quote of like the strength and vulnerability, but like, it is brave to be vulnerable. It is because it's so much harder to say, cry and say I feel shit and I don't know if I can do this or I think I'm fucking up than it is to be like, don't worry, I got it. Like, that's what my therapist said to me. It was like, that's actually quite easy for you. It's quite easy for you to be like, yeah, I got it, you can rely on me. What's hard? Okay, so maybe the hard thing is the thing you need to practice, because that's the thing you're not great at.
That's what you're lacking.
Yeah. And I do think you seem in a good place, you know, but like, obviously when we spoke the first time, it was so raw and so fresh. And I do think you are processing it. I don't feel like somebody who like, oh dear.
She's in denial.
Yeah. You are talking about it.
I'm not like, oh, I'm just going to give my nephew a ring. Be like, what the fuck?
The psychic said, psychic's going to call them. Okay, cool.
No, I'm definitely working on it. But it's that like, it's an ongoing process and it changes and evolves. And like, there is a thing around that I'm still working on, but this like fear at the back of your mind that other people will die.
Oh, yeah.
And of course other people will die, but like if I'm in a time of panic or if I'm stressed, I feel it increase.
Yeah, yeah.
So like my mum got sick quite suddenly recently. She's fine now. But I realised that these things were creeping in, irrational fears. So if like Emily, my girlfriend, if I knew she was cycling, but she cycles a lot, I was petrified the whole time.
Yeah.
And I was seeing her like dead on the road. Or, you know, if I couldn't get through to my mum, she was dead. You know, like, where's my sister? Suddenly I'd wake up in the middle of the night and be like, my sister's dead. And then we'd like, go back to sleep, text her in the morning.
Yeah. We talked about that on the Lauren Silver episode because she has death anxiety.
Yeah.
Like the specific bit of anxiety that's not so much like, oh, I'm worried about this party. It's like, I think everyone will die. Mm-hmm. And I think since Lauren's episode, a lot of people have got in touch with me to be like, oh, I thought it was just me. Yeah, I've got that.
Yeah.
I think if you're in the club, you probably have death anxiety because you know that people can die. Like,
it's crippling.
Unless all your deaths have been like 90-year-old relatives who died very wonderfully in their beds, like you're going to be a little bit like, whoa, like anything can happen. And it's, that, like you said, that creeping in of, oh, everybody else can be taken from me, especially what happened to you because it was so quick, such a quick succession of people just going, oh, they're gone.
And you have to keep a lid on it as well, though, because I'm always separating my rational brain and just like my heart and my gut. And my rational brain knows people will die again, probably, unless I'm the next one to die. I will experience, touch wood.
We're both, of course, we're all me and Kaylee, and the spirits are touching wood.
thank you. We are all going to die. We will face that again, loss and things like that. But definitely, I think I'd stopped going to therapy for nearly about a year now, but purely just because I was good and I was calm and I was, you know, still having my down moments, but I was like, I can handle those. I feel in control. But yeah, when my mum got sick over the course of about 6 weeks, it got to the end of the period, and again, you know, refusing to show weakness, but sort of turned to my girlfriend and was like, I'm actually not okay.
Yeah.
And having to like, so I'm going back to therapy now and I'm taking it in hand, and so I am fine, but it's I think, like finishing therapy last year, at no point was I arrogant enough to go, that's me fixed forever now.
I'm done.
But I was able to go, I'm good and I'm going to enjoy being good for a bit.
Yeah.
And then I also had to accept this year, need a top up.
Yeah.
Need a little rest, need to work things out again, and then we'll get back on the horse. It's the resilience thing.
This idea that grief is seven stages and your fix is so old fashioned and nobody believes that anymore. It's like, there's lots of new metaphors for it, but like it's a big sort of mess, and sometimes it comes back.
I would say off the top of my head right now, grief is, the seven stages of grief do exist, but it's more like popcorn and they come up at random and they don't stop coming up.
Yeah.
But maybe they get slower.
Yeah.
But despair, whatever they are,
yeah,
denial, anger, they come at you at different times.
Well, it's interesting because I've been obviously reading about it. Those seven stages were apparently the thing I read. It was one essay on like one psychological study.
We all just went all in on it. Eggs
because
to the keg.
It was so fucking neat.
Yeah.
So everyone went, that's great. Seven stages and you're done. We can write articles about that. We can make jokes about that. Like, it just really fit that time. And I've said this before, but like, that's what Groundhog Day is based on. Like, he goes through the seven stages of grief. He's denial, anger, like all that. And
that's such a boring film. I find it so formulaic and boring. Maybe that's why, because it just follows a set pattern.
That's the most controversial statement you've said the whole show. People will not, I know, I won't get tweets about the psychics, but I'll get tweets about going, she didn't like Groundhog Day.
I don't like formula. Like, maybe this will be the second controversial. I couldn't get into Curb Your Enthusiasm for the same reason. Too formulaic. Oh, you're going to get angry. You're going to be rude to someone. Then you're going to have to make it up to them every single episode. No.
You allowed your opinions, and I will
but
not.
But shut up.
No, I rewatched Groundhog Day, and I'll say something critical. I still liked it, but I tell you what, Uncle Buck made me cry with laughing. 20 years on, still made me laugh. So good.
Yeah.
So good.
Agreed.
Not that we should compare these things, but on that note, Kaylee Llewellyn.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Maybe we'll have you back for part three.
Trilogy. I'm like The Hobbit. Is The Hobbit a trilogy?
Well, I mean, that's a whole other... It is in film. It shouldn't be. It should be... Don't get me started.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. You can follow Kaylee on Twitter at KDLew, that's LLEW, or you can head to the BBC iPlayer to watch In My Skin Now. And if you do like it, tweet and Instagram about it, because it might help her get a series.
You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at TheGriefCast or email thegriefcast@gmail.com. If you have been enjoying the show, please do rate, review and subscribe. I know everyone asks you to do it, but it genuinely does help other people find the show and allows me to keep making it. The show was edited by Kate Holland with thanks to Whistledown Studios. Music was provided by the Glue Ensemble. And remember, you are not alone.
This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.